Welcome to all of you, and I'm glad that you have joined us here today. I am very tired. It's not important how I got this way, although I could tell you so many stories about this and that. Doesn't matter. What's important is that I am very tired. Now, why is that important? Well, because it affects me, and it's very humid out. It's raining, gonna rain again. It affects me, and too much working, very tired, fixing, everything breaking, you name it, it's breaking. And even I had to replace this thing which holds the drives, which makes everything that we do work. It was an enclosure. And it came yesterday. And I take it out of the box. And they sent me a used one, which was somebody had returned, which was all destroyed. So I get on customer service with Amazon, where I got it, and I'm talking to a devotee from ISKCON on Amazon. It was bizarre. And everything breaking and all things weird, and I'm gonna get another one. And I'm like, there's no hope. It's just bizarre. All these things breaking, our trailer where people stayed in the guest house, that roof just caved in. Have to fix that. I would go on and on and on. There's at least 30 things that are just breaking and things going bad. But that's nothing. If I lived in Houston, I'd have water over my head. So at least, like I said in the beginning, we're not underwater. That's the good news. We're not underwater. But why is this important? Because it affects me. My consciousness has no choice but to be affected. Because my consciousness, as much as I want to say, it's transcendental. It is separate. It is spiritual. It is essence. And it's true. All of that is true. But I am affected by the way in which my body, my mind, my consciousness is relating and interacting with my environment. Because every minute of the day, something is going on. Every minute of the day. And every time I take a nap, somebody calls on the telephone. It's a law. It is a universal law. If this guy is taking a nap, you wait just until he's just asleep, then you call on the telephone. It's a law, unbreakable universal law. And all of this, it has its toll. But not just me, each of us, all of us. You know, I'm in constant communication with many of you out there. Literally 5 to 10 different forms of communication a day, some of them quite substantial. And I know, also I feel it, we are all tired. We are all stressed. And even though the details of how we are tired or stressed is different, There's a different set of details, therefore I use the singular. That set of details is different. We all are basically experiencing it in the same way, because that's just the way it is. These days, things don't flow. Everything's a struggle. We know this. So our spiritual consciousness, our capacity to connect, has to overcome this situation to make like divine harmony that we've been talking about. Okay, interesting. Now, does that mean we can't connect? No. Does it mean it's harder to do so? No. It means that in our everyday struggling, perhaps our connection to essence is diminished as we fight the energy of the body, of the mind's tiredness, of the environment's struggle. But, and this is what's really cool, when we enter into that state of meditation, whereby we let the entirety of existence go, and here's the important wording of it, we let it go, because it holds us. Our bodies hold us, our minds, our desires, our understandings. We are held by these things. But we are also holding them. That's what attachment means. I'm not speaking about detachment now as the cure to that kind of attachment, because attachment and detachment are very similar in many ways. I'm speaking about letting go. A sense of humor is required. You have to be able to just look at the bind we are in and laugh about it. You have to be able to laugh at yourself, to laugh at the struggle you're going through. It's like when I was, because this thing with the enclosure I mentioned before was like the straw that was breaking the camel's back, because it was really something I needed. And it came broken. And when I go to get help from Amazon, I end up talking to a devotee. His Amazon name was Mukunda, so I answered. I wrote immediately, "Ah, Mukunda Murari." And he replied, "Wait a minute, that's actually my name." And I had to just laugh. Here I am. This is not the first tech support thing this week. It was like the fifth or sixth of things breaking. And I'm at the end where I'm going to just crack up and scream. And I'm doing a Hari Bol, how are you discussion with Amazon tech support. And he even promised me free shipping on a replacement for one day, and he didn't do it. I thought that makes perfect sense. So you gotta be able to laugh. You have to see the absurdity. If you don't allow yourself to see absurdity in a situation, you can't go on. Because sometimes nature pushes. But when you laugh, or when you let go and stop fighting, nature's not pushing the same way. It changes. So sometimes I think, well, is it possible that the shift that should be happening, just ask Maha, he'll tell you all about it, is meant really for us to stop fighting it, to stop struggling, to simply just let go, to just let go of the struggle. First of all, we're not going to win, because there is nothing to win. We just got to go on day after day, step by step. You know, after all, we're just going to end up old and die. What is the long-term winning here? But we forget that. We get absorbed in our day-to-day, and we don't think about what's important. What's really important is don't take it all so seriously. Let go. And that's what happens when we go into this meditation. The immediate effect, and it happens very rapidly, especially when you're in this pressure kind of cooker, because the obvious differences are so dramatic between the pressure cooker and not in the pressure cooker. So when you go into the meditative state, you turn off the heat on the pressure cooker and you just let it all go. And you chuckle inside, you giggle. Look what I just did. It's all going away. And if you know what you're doing, and I guarantee you most of you know what you're doing, it doesn't come back. It's not a fight, because you've learned to stop fighting. Because when you let go, you are in your space. Your space. You don't have to create that space. You just have to get things out of it by letting go. And then you sit in your meditation. And then connecting to the deity, connecting to the divine, connecting to Radha and Krishna or whoever your deities are, it becomes much easier. Much easier, because the contrast is obvious. There is this state of fight, and there is this state of surrender, where you just let go and embrace that loving energy of the Supreme, of the Divine. Really, I don't like using the words like Supreme. Every time I say it, I go, gee, it's like I'm looking for words to speak about God. And, you know, when you're lazy or you're tired, hey, I said I was tired in the beginning. You gotta just go with me here. You end up with, like, quick words. Words that don't really say anything. Supreme is one of those words. The Supreme. How is that relevant to me? Well, Supreme, that's a big thing. Me, I'm a little thing. Ugh. That concept is just not useful. Not now. Supreme and fear and great and small and these kind of things are not useful. Divine, divinity, is useful because I'm part of that. That's not part, that's not a word that creates division. It's a word that creates connection. That divine beings can connect within a divine energy. Obviously, we wish to connect to the most divine because we like that. That's the best for us. It's not even we have to discuss this. So let's put all these other issues about out of the way. That's why I don't like the word supreme. Yeah, it slips out, especially when I'm tired, because it requires an effort to reprogram vocabulary, because words have meaning. And if you're true to your essence, concepts are part of that. And to maintain the integrity that we are, maintaining integrity to the concepts that we embrace requires a discipline of the mind where words are used that actually express who we are. Names are very important. Names, because when our name is connected to who we are, that expression or designation of us becomes a reflection of our reality. And when we have defined ourselves in that way, our name carries a potency. That is a universal principle. In the exact same way, obviously not quantitatively, but in the exact same way. I have to say that, by the way. Whenever I make a point, I have to say something, because if some people hear this, they kind of freak out because they think that somehow or another I'm saying that we're God. I mean, good grief already. I don't think we're, you know, I forget it. I'm not going to get into it. Anyway, just like God, the name of the Supreme Divine God and the divine being themselves, non-different. But that is a universal principle, because the being infuses the name. When the name arises from the being, with the quality of that personality. When we speak about somebody and we say their name, the person and the name are connected, because we make it so by our intention that the name we just used is definitely representing that person who we're talking about. And the opposite is true. When we define ourselves as who we are, not as others wish us to be, but as who we are without fear, truly are, our name reflects that. That energy reflects that. Now, others may try to infuse that, our names, with negativity. But we, in our meditative state, especially when we connect to the Lord's, we are infusing our essence into existence as well. The emanation of our energy into existence, into our name, into our environment. Because now we are defining our space rather than our space is defining us. Now, if you've been observing in the beginning of this lecture, I started off kind of tired. Why am I not tired now? And also, why is the energy that I was kind of assembling in the beginning no longer here? Why is it different? Because I created this space. Did I do it alone? No. Because you are listening, there is this connection. So now this space is not just me and Maha, because he's very much part of it. It's us. And that is a very different energy, much more powerful. And while I was doing this, I was guaranteeing your right to being who you are, even your name, to infusing the expression of yourself into the atmosphere, into your space, into your environment, so that others understood you. You can only do this without fear. If you have fear, it doesn't work. If you think of yourself as not good enough, that's fear. Doesn't work. If you think of yourself as unattractive, fear. It doesn't work. If you overcompensate and push yourself out there as very great in one form or another, or you blow your own trumpet to be something better than someone else or whatever, it's the same fear that you're not good enough, so you're overcompensating. It doesn't work. How does it work? You let go of all of those things, including fear. When you create space, which means your energy is filling that area, fear cannot be part of it. Otherwise, you've created a space which is defective. Defective space. A space of fear. We got that already. Why should we be involved in reinforcing already existing defective energy? That is not useful to anybody. It's not our role. We are seekers of the truth. We are seekers of spirituality. We are connected to our deities. And we wish to share them in our space. So the space that we live within when we enter into our integral essence is defined by our conscious focus on that space. So incredibly important. And I was thinking when I was trying to figure out what to speak about, and hey, that's difficult. It's work. It makes one tired. What am I going to talk about? So I always go to the deities. I had written this junk weeks ago. I'm throwing it out now. It is the worst possible thing I could have possibly talked about. And it's good it's on this paper because now I can just... This is what I think about all of that. Useless. So I go into the temple room and I ask the deities, what should I speak about? Now, when I ask, what should I speak about? I don't mean, what do you want me to speak about? Because I'm the speaker. I am at least equally important in this endeavor. So I ask, what should I speak about? Because it's a different kind of question. The first question is back in those days where you got Supreme and little itsy bitsy and you tell me what to do and I just rush out and do it. Such demanding attitude. You tell me, then I shall act. I have no brain. I can't make decisions. You just tell me. Many people like that. I don't. I ask, what should I do? Because we're having a discussion here. I'm here before you. I need advice. Advice. When you ask for advice, what should I do? How should I do it? You are in a symbiotic relationship with a persons, who you're having this discussion with. You ask for advice. And they advised me, we'll talk about sacred spaces. I said, you know, wow, I really like that topic. Because for me, sacred spaces are like cool. Like when we got this place where we're living now, it was a wreck like you cannot imagine. I mean, anyway, so the first room I created in this house was the temple room. I did it all myself. Ripped out all the junk, put stuff together and made it nice and got the temple room nice. Because for me, this place had no meaning without that space. The sacred space is primary. The shelter, the sacred place. It is defining existence. Now, if I could, I would go create a sacred space like, oh my. Let's get this out of the way because it's there already in my head. When I was working on the Mayapur project, I wasn't really a fan of temple, building a huge temple. I was more into the education, the sociology, the economic support, the integration with the community, the agriculture, making it all nice with roads and the sewage and the water treatment and flood protection, health and welfare and blah, blah. If you could remember all that, Maha, you're a better man than me. So, but when it came to temple, because yeah, that's what we had to do too. For me, I was mainly interested in the sacred space. And because it was supposed to be from the communist days of Bengal, in the communist days, Prabhupada cooked up this idea to make a temple of Vedic planetarium, because then it would be a scientific organization and it would not be religious. So the government, the communist government could not object so much. So I actually, over the years, had thought about this, to have planets flying around, but the planets are not planets. It's not like we're in a planetarium. Because if you know anything about gemology, for instance, in the Vedic, especially with astrologers, that a gem has a particular kind of a frequency of light. It's rather limited in the spectrum. And it's useful for health, or it's useful for your mood, or it's useful in many ways. And it also helps to strengthen a weak planet or to mitigate one that's giving you trouble. And so these gems are related to planets. And they have a frequency. So I had somebody who was very good at mathematics. His name was Markandeya. He was a really good mathematician. So I said, it's my theory at the time. This was like 1981 or something. It's my theory that this frequency of this gem that relates to that planet, when you take it down in octaves And this is a totally new kind of a concept. You have to change the base within which you are calculating. We usually work in base 10. If you consider music in whole notes as base 8, you get a whole nother form of calculation. And so you take it down in octaves until you get to the audible frequency, somewhere near middle C. And I told him, I predict that frequency of Jupiter will be the D note. So after a month or two, I don't remember how long it took him to figure out this whole new system of mathematics, genius he was, it was 1 hertz above D. Woo! I like that. So I said, do the same thing for all of the gems representing all of the major planets. So we got this chart. So think about it. We now have light, because each of the spectrums is a color. Light is very much higher frequency than sound. So each of the planets have a light and now an audible sound that relates to them. And then you have charts of people, astrological, where you have their planets are affecting them in different ways. I had this vision of Atlantis. I've had these often. I don't have them anymore. That, in those days, I had it a lot, maybe because it was useful. And I saw a temple which was not of a deity, but was like a healing kind of a center, which had this like circular platform in the middle, and then there was some kind of thing above it, and it made emanations. I didn't understand it all that well, so I can't describe it. And it was based in light and sound frequencies that were tailored to each individual who walked into that space, and it balanced their energy and healed them on different levels. Because one could manipulate the sound and the light to, according to the astrological calculations, that were most beneficial for the person at that time, taking into consideration their momentary changes in their aspects and so on. And so I thought, well, hey, now instead of a boring planetarium with some planets flying around, which is a fixed thing, and I mean really boring, we put in each of the planets a laser, and we have those gems or something, some kind of crystals, which reproduce the frequency of each of the planets, and the light in the room would be made of these planets, and it would be changing in a way which would be advantageous according to the day or whatever. I don't know, it was all speculation. Hey, I can dream. And sounds would be there, similarly, in special speakers, which were specifically aimed to focus the sound. I had been working on that in Mayapur, how to deal with echo, so much echo. And then you would have like dolphin sounds or whale sounds would be the background of all this, like the dolphin sounds. This oceanic kind of an atmosphere, because it's so compatible with this kind of environment of healing. And I thought that we would transform this space into this incredible consciousness-raising energy, which would take away words from people, would take away thought from people. And they would walk in and be in the presence of these incredible Radha Madhava. I mean, those deities are unlimitedly powerful. Panchatattva. Unlimitedly powerful. We worked for years to get these deities right, Panchatattva, with the Ashtadhatu, with the elements that they are made of, and the perfect balance, and the forms of the deities. I think it was almost 8 years of designing. And to mold them in exactly the right way with the exact mixture of the elements, you know, to get them all to stick together is no easy task. And to get them to do that all mixed perfectly in a beautiful form, not easy. And then you would have like these mantras creating this ethereal spiritual atmosphere within this light and sound, and in the presence of these deities, you walk in and you are transformed instantly. Whether you believe or don't believe, whether you are trying or not trying, just sweep you off your feet. Sacred space. That was how I wanted to do it. I have no idea what they actually are doing, but I want to do that in our place too, in St. Petersburg. That will require quite some funds and quite some scientists involved. I don't know if I'll be able to find those formulas. They're somewhere. I don't know if I can find them. But can you imagine that if temples were like that? And you could also have people who had like a basic similar kind of condition, and they could come before the deities, and you would program this to heal them in this divine atmosphere. I mean, now, that would be something. That's what I like. That turns me on. You know, if you want to ask what I like and, you know, what turns me on as a person is this integration of all of this spectacular. I call it Atlantean because I think, anyway, it could be just my imagination, but I feel that's the way it was. Now, yeah, you got to be really careful, because with this stuff you can do all kinds of other things too. As it gets more powerful, you add in, I'm not going to say, but that's how you can ruin everything. All right, forget that. Now, what about us? Okay, we can't necessarily go to such a place, first of all, because it doesn't exist yet. Second of all, even if it does, you have to get yourself there. So what do we do? How does a sacred space relate to us? Well, just like we were explaining here, because of our connection as a group, I was able to create this space that we're now all in. It's a group effort. So I'm like a cook here, just cooks up this space. And we have it together, all of us. We're all the ingredients of the space. Now, we all can do the same thing. Every one of us have the same exact capacity. Like I told you, the first thing I did here was to make the temple room. Everything else, chaos. I couldn't have cared less. Temple room. And to go into the temple room. And to let go everything that doesn't belong there. Because when you have a defined area, it's easier to cleanse it from things which don't belong there. Everything else just goes away. You can even create a bubble, a protective bubble around that space. You create it. You just push up white energy around, or whatever color you feel best with. Push it up into a bubble around a sphere that just pushes away all unwanted things. Make a chimney and let all unwanted things shoot out of it. Just shoot them out. close it up. This space is yours now. And in this space is you and your deities, the divine. And you fill it with that divine. You fill it with that divinity. I'm not doing it now, so don't bother with it. I'm just telling you about it. Fill it with the divinity. Fill it with the divine. And that space is now yours. When you're connected with the divine, it's ours. The usness. Us means our. It becomes our space. And the difference between that space and every other space nowadays is so drastic, it's so obvious, it's so radical, that it becomes easier to create the space, not harder. Easier. Because all of that stuff is just so, ugh. And all of this stuff is so, is a huge difference. The distinction is very, very easy to see. Very clear distinction. It's not like there's a mixture in any way. It's just, because when we make actual connections, true connections, I think this word true, truly create a connection, true connections, it is so obviously different than this stressful, antagonizing existence that is outside of us. And if enough of us create this bubble of true divinity, true connection, can you imagine the effect in the world where these truly divine pockets of power are just expressing their divinity despite all that is around? At one point, we have a very big lifting where we become detached from that anchor called, quote unquote, in this sense, actually so, reality. It is not real. It's not real, but it's not truly what is in essence. Because when we die, and believe me, it's going to happen really fast nowadays to a lot of people, it's no longer relevant, all this. The true relevance is that integrity of essence. That's the only true relevance. And the more of these us bubbles, our spaces between us and our divine lords, I like that word, our divine lords, where we are connected and this space just fills with that divinity. You cannot imagine the effect on this planet. And if we could have such a temple with this kind of a presentation in it, can you imagine that? If we had these kind of people, us, within this kind of a space before those kind of deities. And our deities in St. Petersburg are every bit as powerful. You cannot imagine their power. And you will have such power and potency that everything will lift. Maybe that's why they can't find any Atlantis. It's very hard to say. So, what I feel, what I think, is that we are on the cusp of something really cool. And our deities are very important for that. And how we see ourselves and how we see our connection in that is so incredibly important. So I want to leave you with those thoughts. And we can take a break. And if you have any questions, you can ask. Please find your papers. Oh my God. I think that we could reproduce the mathematics if there was some really good mathematician. We could reproduce the mathematics of it. I have absolutely no idea where to find it. Actually, I do have an idea, but I can't. It's going to take years. I'll write it down. Maybe I can. All right. This is an interesting question. Can we say that making proper atmosphere and space is the real foundation for real spirituality, for real connection? Yeah. Yes, that is probably the most important foundation, but creating a proper space, or the space within which, and yes, it was, the brahmanas were busy making proper atmospheres and proper spaces. Yes, that's correct. In the old days, especially in yogyas and everything and whatever they did. So, but when we do it within ourselves, you can't get any spiritual realization without establishing the space. And yes, it's absolutely true. What are Kasi Rev mirrors? You know? Cool. Well, go right ahead and keep on experimenting. And when you get something together, let me know. Maybe we should teach people how to joke. You can't teach humor. You either got it or you don't got it. I'm not understanding. Manojava is writing a comment. Is he answering somebody else and commenting? Or is it? Oh, here we go. Okay. Well, in our temple, the deities definitely, by their own presence, create a unique space. And it is a very unique space because of who they are. Yes, it is definitely true. And how we interact with them and how we connect with them is incredibly important. Also, one of the more relevant deities to exactly what I just said with all of this creation of space and all of that is Goddess Durga. And I think that most people have no clue who she is, no understanding whatsoever. Even if they read it out of a book or they read some pastimes or something, they have no clue, because she regulates all the energy. And if you think that you're transcendental and you only have to do with Radha and Krishna or whatever, you don't understand that you live in this world. You live in this reality around us. And how it's working here is very much dependent on and interacted with her. After all, Radha has expanded in this way specifically for that interaction to take place in this world. So Goddess Durga is so incredibly important to us. And to interact with her, especially within these healing environments or within this dealing with space or the way in which that overflows and integrates within this world, I mean, we have the most amazing deities you could possibly imagine. The power, the capacity, the potency, the potential, spectacular, beyond anybody's belief. Therefore, I would like to complete the temple and actually do these kind of things. Because when it's your own space, you can actually invest in these kind of things. Not cheap. So we need to have some, you know, we need a bank owner to say, hey, you guys are cool, here, let me help you. Believe me, I would love that. Okay, I shall say goodbye to all of you for now. May your spaces be ever perfect. May your lives become more and more interesting. And may you attain everything you are within this lifetime by letting go and embracing that beautiful person you are in relationship to those beautiful deities we have. So goodbye to all of you.